This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And welcome once again to It Takes a Village. I'm Shahid Hamid, and as usual, the first Friday is the time in which we check out the village and all matters that relates to the village, directly or indirectly. Okay. Today, I'm fortunate to have as my guest, Mr. Michael Alexander, President and CEO of the local chapter of the Urban League. And he had a gathering, a group accompanying him to Salem that he'll update us on a number of weeks ago. And we're going to discuss the purpose of his trip and the results of his trip right here on It Takes a Village. Stay with us. Yes, and I'd like to welcome now Michael Alexander to KBOO Studios. Welcome, Michael.
Welcome.
Great. Tell us a little bit about your trip to Salem recently. And it was in February, I believe.
Yes.
So it wasn't kind of recently. The trip to Salem was in February. But it gives us an idea of the agenda. The agenda of the Portland Urban League this year and some of the efforts that you're pursuing. Visiting the legislature in Salem, give us a little bit of background, maybe tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me back. I had the opportunity to come and speak with you maybe a week or two before our trip to Salem, which we called our Voices United Legislative Action Day. Mm-hmm. And this was done in concert with a number of other partners, the Commission on Black Affairs, as well as the Portland African American Leadership Forum. But with the convening of the legislative session, it was important for us to gather community representatives across generations and across sectors of our community to travel down to Salem and to make sure that those issues that were of primary concern to us found their way to the list of priorities of the hundreds of proposed bills that were awaiting the legislature. And so the coalition came together, and we were able to take in excess of 250 people down to Salem to meet with legislators both in the House and the Senate, and to have a number of items elevated so that they knew these were of priority to many of the members of the coalition. There were a couple of proposed bills that were of particular importance to the Urban League, and we sort of maintained a very focused and vigilant campaign to work with the legislators and many of those champions who were helping us to move that through both the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm.
Just before we kind of get into the substance of of that trip. The overall state of Black Oregon right now, can you kind of give us a snapshot from the Urban League's perspective?
Well, you know, that's a it's a very far-reaching question, and I think it would take us down many paths. When you talk about the state of Black Oregon, initially my focus goes back to the work that was done by the Urban League in 2009 in both compiling the data and publishing the state of Black Oregon. We were at the very beginning of an economic recession that had begun to show signs of direct impact on our community across a number of socioeconomic and political areas. We saw that African Americans were continuing to lag behind other parts of the state, other populations within the state. In the areas of education and economics, we had disproportionate representation within the criminal justice system, and there were quality of life issues, police profiling, and others that continued to be of not only concern to us, but of growing concern. Mm-hmm. One area that did materialize in this legislative session had to do with the area of health disparities. The greater impact of chronic illness and other disease states on African Americans at a much higher level than other groups and of white Oregonians, as well as the changing environment within the healthcare delivery system, that if we didn't find a way of addressing those disparities, would only serve to widen them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I think of the question about the overall status of African Americans within the state, you know, we continue to see disparities and widening gaps around critical measures like employment, mm-hmm. Critical measures like educational achievement, critical measures like high school graduation rates, mm-hmm. And critical measures like disproportionate treatment within the criminal justice system and foster care and areas where we know we would like to see those gaps narrowed mm-hmm. through sound policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have in my hand a State of Black Oregon 2009 statistics. And this is what I think prompted my question, because it was presented by the Urban League, and it shows the disparities in housing and income, percentage of Black adults with no checking accounts, education, obviously. Black students are twice as likely to be suspended and expelled as white students.
That's correct.
The criminal justice area, which you just alluded to, violence in our communities and discrimination with housing. It seems that now more African Americans are being pushed out to the East County area, and of course the health disparities. So with all of these seemingly monumental issues that we have, I was just wondering, in terms of how do you set your priorities and what areas how are you going to structure addressing these many areas in terms of how you're going to prioritize?
Well, I think the question is a legitimate one, and it has to be asked not only of the Urban League, but of government, policymakers, leadership within our communities, organizations who are charged with impacting the populations covered in those areas, whether it's housing or the criminal justice system, discipline within our school systems. Part of our approach is to come back in 2014 and to update the State of Black Oregon, to go back into each of those metrics and those areas of measurement, and to look at where we are today. We have to have some sense of what has worked to help improve where there may be improvements in some of those metrics over the last 5 years, the last 4 years. And also where the efforts have either not taken place or they've taken place and they've not been successful, so that we may need to look at strengthening or revising policies that mm-hmm. are in place. Mm-hmm. The State of Black Oregon 2014 will give us an idea of where we've been able to move forward and where we, quite frankly, are going to need to fortify or redirect our efforts. And that's not only on the part of the league, but on the part of those within
the community
whose charge,
as a whole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who would place those as issues of importance. But it also provides the data by which you can make that determination, because it is very hard at times to disaggregate the data around some of those areas to determine the impact on African Americans mm-hmm. versus other communities of color versus the overall community across the state.
Mm-hmm. What has worked? This statistics that I read earlier, or the statistics that we have with us now, goes to 2009. We know that a lot of these data is not available until the census comes around, and we can get a better view on the state of the community. What has improved? What do you, from your perspective, what are some of the successes, and what are some of the areas that still need a great deal of attention? I know that's kind of obvious, but I mean, from your perspective.
Well, yeah, I think the way that I would approach answering that is to say that part of finding solutions to some of these very complex issues have to do not only with what programs are in place, but with the policies that underscore them. And in the area of healthcare, particularly healthcare disparities, amid some of the changes that are taking place within the healthcare delivery system here in Oregon due to healthcare reform. One of the areas that I hold as having great potential going forward is the work that was done in cultural competency this last legislative session. And this was House Bill 2611. What it does is first acknowledge that in many times healthcare disparities are an outcome of a healthcare delivery system and healthcare professionals who do not have a good grasp or understanding of the cultures of the individual communities that they will serve. And many times that has a direct bearing on the level of understanding and literacy around important healthcare matters within that community. It has a bearing on compliance. And it has a bearing on addressing some issues of trust that at times can become barriers to having people take full advantage of not only healthcare treatment, but of information and prevention services and management of chronic illness. And the passage of this bill requires that all healthcare professionals who are part of regulatory boards or licensing boards be provided the opportunity to go through cultural competency training. And that is regardless of whether you are a physician or a social worker or a psychologist or any other, a nurse, nurse practitioner, physician's assistant. It allows for them to begin to understand some of the basic underlying tenets of the cultures of the patients that they will serve. And it provides a way for them to become much more effective in how they communicate and provide strategies for constructive engagement of folks that they're going to work with.
So now that has that passed?
Yes, it has. Okay. Yes, it has.
Because
it was actually signed. I was down in Oregon 2 weeks ago for the signing of the bill by the governor.
And when does it take effect?
January of 2014.
2014. That is great, because that was one of the things a lot of times I hear in my travels around the community, that those individuals who are seeking mental health services or addiction treatment services and other kinds of health care services, the chief complaint is that they rarely see anybody that looks like them. And so, you know, you're perfectly right. Understanding the nuances of the community, the culture, goes a long way in addressing treatment outcomes that are so important in our community, and particularly in areas of health and other areas as well. So that's really good to hear. How were you received generally? How with the trip that you call? I'm sorry.
That was the our Voices United.
Voices United. Yeah, Voices United. How were you received generally? How were you received by?
I think we were very warmly and enthusiastically received. It was, I'm sure, a very different look and feel in the Capitol that day. To have, you know, hundreds of African Americans, and not only from Portland, but from across the state. There were representatives who were there, not only locally from Salem, but from Eugene and Corvallis. You know, we had an intergenerational group, mm-hmm. high school students mm-hmm. From a number of black student unions around the state, as well as seniors. We've had a couple dozen of our seniors who ventured down from our senior day program there on MLK. Mm-hmm. As well as activists and representatives from over two dozen different organizations. The Cultural Competency Bill had support of more than 30 different community organizations, professional groups, and several healthcare institutions as well. So it was... it was well organized and well planned. The coalition, particularly with the work of the Urban League and PALF, the Portland African American Leadership Forum, did some prep work. People were screened and asked which issues they wanted to be able to speak to legislators directly about. We were able to schedule time and do prep and have a clear message that we wanted to have left with legislators. So that was sort of worked at in planning meetings prior. And so I think it was well planned, and consequently it was well received. And we spent the better part of the day talking to folks, but we also spent some time attending a session of the state Senate where there was a resolution passed honoring Charles Jordan and Rob Ingram. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in many ways, it was just a very rich and fulfilling day.
Mm-hmm. Is that going to be... is that going to be a yearly kind of trek you guys make down to Salem, or is that just right now looking at some of the issues that the community is facing and attending to some immediate kind of concerns?
Well, it's a part of our legislative advocacy agenda. we the league had the same strategy and same approach 2 years ago prior to my joining, but this was one of the programs that was identified by our advocacy and citizen engagement team. This is led by Midge Purcell, who I know is well known within this community, and her staff. 2 years ago, the bill, the cultural competency bill that just passed this year, was introduced and came within a single vote of passage. So the organization and those in support of this legislation, you know, reconvened after and looked at what it would take to not fall short again. So in answer to your question, these type of legislative sort of outreaches and engagement days, I anticipate, as long as there are issues that are coming up before the legislator, that we want to make sure receive a fair hearing and a visible one, and are appropriate for community support, we will use this approach and use this tact.
Are you concerned about the impact on the President Obama's healthcare initiative that's due to take place? I know it was certain aspects of it was put off until next year. I think the employer requirement for healthcare. But how do you envision the new healthcare initiative affecting the work that you guys are trying to do?
Well, you know, I think that our work has largely been focused on the structure of healthcare reform within the state of Oregon. Oregon, I think, is probably in a very handful of states that are viewed at the forefront of healthcare reform. Many of the changes that have been made and the movement towards the creation of affordable care organizations here are much more advanced than in other parts of the country. And so I think while we're concerned about sort of the overarching adoption of the Affordable Care Act across the nation, our primary focus here with the Urban League of Portland is in the host environment of Oregon. It's going to be interesting to see what type of impact the employer mandate, the postponement of it, will have here in Oregon. But my sense is that it is just one element of the work. You'll still see the work going forward with the exchanges. You'll still see the work going forward with the structuring of these coordinated care organizations and much more integrated care delivery. So, you know, I think it's going to be an area of interest, and it's one segment of the employer population. It doesn't impact larger employers. It doesn't impact those who will remain self-funded. So it's a portion of it. We'll see what the impact is in time.
Okay. Cultural competency. That's something that many of us here in Oregon have been struggling with for quite some time in trying to understand, in trying to get folks to understand, what does that look like? What are some of the, as you mentioned, bill was signed by the governor recently that's going to kind of mandate some sort of cultural competency issues, are going to mandate some sort of cultural competency requirement. What exactly does that look like? Because a lot of folks will, you know, they tell you, well, we can't find anybody qualified, and that they can't, being that we are but 2% of the state population, that there's an educational issue, and a lot of folks, particularly those of us who work in with the homeless or the addicted and so forth, they have requirements sometimes that put it out of reach for a lot of folks trying to enter the field and trying to make a contribution to the health of the community.
Yeah.
Can you kind of help us with that?
Well, you know, that is a that's an ongoing challenge, and I think it's an ongoing challenge across the country. However, there are places like Oregon that have sort of additional levels of complexity. You're right, the relatively small percentage of representation of African Americans in the state make it very difficult for us to many times recruit those healthcare professionals here and behavioral health professionals as well. And I don't think that work should ever stop. I think we should, you know, continue to press on to find out how we can make that happen. Mm-hmm. But short of that, it's important that regardless of the nationality or the racial composition of whoever serves us, that there is a greater understanding of how best to have a patient-centered focus. And a patient-centered focus means that I understand the path to successful engagement with this individual. In many instances, it's going to be strongly influenced by issues of culture and issues of ethnicity.
Oh, most definitely.
And that can be trained, or at least that can be improved upon through training, through information. And the focus of the bill is to create continuing education opportunities so that regardless of whether it's your urologist, whether it's your MSW case manager, whether it's your primary care physician, that their overall awareness of how best they serve this individual who presents within this set of cultural characteristics, it needs to be focused on improved. And also, you know, each of the governing boards or the licensing boards will make these continuing education opportunities available. But the Oregon Health Authority is also charged with trying to find and identify what some of those training and informational modules can be, where they exist, how do they provide them so that folks are not limited to what they know.
Mm-hmm. Michael C. Alexander, President and CEO of Portland Urban League. Sir, thank you so much for coming into the studios today and appearing here on It Takes a Village. We wish you all of the success, and you're welcome at any time to come and address the community.
Well, thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Shaheed Ahmed for It Takes a Village here on KBOO, and inviting you to stay tuned for the blues. You got the Blues Festival coming up this weekend, and KBOO, of course, is an integral part of that. Until next time, next month, for It Takes a Village, I'm Shaheed. Peace. We out.
This KBOO program has been brought to you today by in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Oregon Country Fair, July 12th, 13th, and 14th, featuring music, food, and crafts in Vineta, Oregon. Admission and parking tickets are available only at Tickets West, as absolutely no tickets will be sold at the fair site. Directions to this family event and information on the shuttle at Valley River Center available online at OregonCountryFair.org.
TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Rebecca Solnit, Hollow City. The destruction of San Francisco in the late 1990s. A new generation of writers such as Rebecca Solnit, Mike Davis, and Gray Bracken are intriguing us into seeing our familiar surroundings with new eyes. They also offer a different perspective on the radical transformation that development and venture capital have brought to so many cities. San Francisco, formerly famous for taking a traveler's heart away, is now reaching for the soul and the wallet. A dot-com boom, combined with a growing biotechnology industry, have driven housing prices up and residents and local small businesses out. Rebecca Solnit, already an accomplished young writer with several books to her credit, says she wrote Hollow City in a hurry to document the beauty and rich culture that was being destroyed and to inspire the growing movement of resistance. The book itself, published by